Hello, and welcome to this new edition of Stuff We Like, the podcast where we celebrate, well, stuff we like. Whether it's food or drink or places to visit, old and new technology, things to celebrate in show business, this is the place to do it. Now, the internet may be full of people moaning about stuff, and let's face it, we all love to do that every so often, but this isn't that place. So without any further ado, let's dive straight into Stuff We Like. Today's podcast is all about technology. The things we like, which make our lives easier, supposedly, which fascinate us, or which we simply enjoy using or talking about. And interestingly, I'm going to kick it off with a history lesson. Okay, I can see you glazing over already. You heard me, an intriguing piece of history which has its roots in the 19th century, but which has impact on our use of technology today. I want to tell you about a rather remarkable woman. Her name was Ada Lovelace. Yeah, I can hear you scratching your heads already, unless you've already heard of her, that is. But this is one intriguing woman, Ada Lovelace. Now, I'm aware her name sounds a bit like a romantic novelist in the mould of Barbara Cartland, but don't be deceived. Ada Lovelace was born in 1815. She was the daughter of Lord Byron, okay? The famous buccaneering poet and adventurer. More about him in another podcast, I dare say. She was, in fact, the only legitimate child of Lord Byron. She never got to know her infamous father, but as she was growing up, her mother fostered her innate mathematical gifts. And when she was a young woman, she got to know the computer designer, Charles Babbage. Now, in the 1820s, Charles Babbage had designed an early prototype computer, which he called the Analytical Engine, or which was known as the Analytical Engine, and which Babbage thought was a supercalculator. But Ada Lovelace saw within that machine the capability for so much more than just calculating. In fact, she could see the potential which computers had. And this is a quote from her. "The computer might act upon other things besides number. Supposing, for instance, that the fundamental relations of pitched sounds in the science of harmony and of musical composition were susceptible of such expression and adaptations, the engine might compose elaborate and scientific pieces of music for any degree of complexity or extent." So what that meant was Ada Lovelace was already beginning to see the potential of this early computer for creating musical programs, for example. The technology which later in the 1970s and 1980s brought us sequencing and sampling in synthesizers was first conceptualized, thought up by Ada Lovelace more than a century earlier. So she wasn't just thinking of it as a calculating instrument, but something that could bring harmony into lives. Very interesting. Now, Charles Babbage also saw his machine as a supercalculator, but she was, in fact, an early conceptual visionary. When she worked in second documents for Babbage later on, she appended some notes about it regarding the use of the machine, which many people today recognise as the first ever computer program. There are debates as to how much she actually contributed to this and how much was Babbage's own work, although Babbage himself ascribed a lot to Ada. Again, I quote from Babbage's words. "We discussed together the various illustrations that might be introduced. I suggested several, but the selection was entirely her own. So also was the algebraic working out of the different problems, except indeed that relating to the numbers of Bernoulli, which I had offered to do to save Lady Lovelace the trouble. This she sent back to me for an amendment, having detected a grave mistake which I had made in the process." So what this means was, not only was Ada Lovelace contributing to the logic of the first computer program, but she was also debugging it, finding errors which Babbage had made and correcting them. Ada Lovelace died at the age of 36. But remember, the next time you power up your laptop, switch on your Kindle, your iPhone, or your fancy Android tablet, remember that some of the early concepts for the stuff you see and interact with on there were pioneered by a young woman at the height of London society in the early 19th century. Sometimes history can throw us little curveballs which make it that much more interesting. Okay, so here we are for our first interview with the second episode of Stuff We Like, Elspeth Paisley. Hi. Tell us a bit about yourself, Elspeth.
So I'm a mum, I'm a wife, and I'm the communications manager of Lifeline, which is a large third sector organisation in East London. Mm-hmm. And that's me.
So what does that job involve?
So I work across a broad spectrum of the communications. So I work in marketing, in what you might term public affairs, and in the website and social media. And actually, it's the website and social media that I've become really quite passionate and involved in over the last
years. It's interesting, because I was going to ask you, the next question was, what makes you want to get up and go to work in the morning? So tell me more about the social media aspect of it then.
So the social media aspect we've been developing over the last year or so, and I think as we've started to get into the world of Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn more recently, as the three main social media brands, we can see the benefit of the networking of people together, of raising our profile as an organisation, but just the interest of conversation that you can generate through social media, and kind of the geeky bit of me just enjoys gaining new followers and getting people to come and comment on our posts and getting the information out there. It's a way of being really passionate about our organisation and getting the stories out there.
Right, so what sort of stories? You would have regular updates, regular sort of, do you push emails out and tell people about the organisation, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we would push emails out, we'd put a news item on our site about perhaps one of our beneficiaries who we've helped as an organisation, and the story's really fabulous, and that, you know, we've changed somebody's life from being like this to being like this, and it's been a positive step forward. And I love telling people, kind of gossiping that good news about what's happened in somebody's life. And social media gives you that platform to be able to say, hey, go and look at that story on that website. So instead of it being a passive piece of information sitting on the website, you actually can actively go and tell people, go and look at it, it's there. So I can put a little tweet out to say, go and, you know, click on this link and it'll take you to this fantastic
just
story.
Just very active, proactive sort of way of working.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about technology? What sort of things do you want to sort of share with us? What sort of stuff do you like?
Well, to be honest, what has really floated my boat over the last year has been the ability to, having created a website and having kind of set up these various social media channels, I've become a bit big brotherish. So I want to know who's looking at our website. I want to know how they're using it.
Right.
I want to know what they've clicked through to. Mm. And I think it's because I'm a bit of a nosy Parker, really. But you want to know what you're doing is effective. So Google Analytics is the most amazingly powerful tool. And you discover that you can go onto Google Analytics and go into one of the various menu options that you have there. You can actually see who's clicking onto your website. You can see which pages they've clicked through to. You can see how long they've stayed on a page and kind of start to draw down some information about how people are using the website, which, of course, a bit of information like that really helps in developing the whole thing. And likewise with Facebook, for example, with the insights on Facebook, I can go and have a look and see, well, I know how many people have liked a comment or how many people have shared a comment, but I can go and have a look on the insights and see how many times that's been shared. So in other words, how has that gone viral? Whole thing of something going viral, it's a bit of a word or a phrase that's used, but what does it really mean?
Mm.
And so the number of times that somebody's shared something, so the number of people, therefore, who have seen a post as opposed to what I might have thought they'd have concentrated on before. So that, to me, has been quite an exciting thing, but it's the sort of thing that really can suck you in and I could spend many hours looking at it if I allowed myself to.
Right, right.
But yeah, and the number of hits on the website, for example, from Google. So how do people access our website? Do they access it directly? Do they go through Google? Do they use a different search engine? I can concentrate my efforts in putting the keywords that out there that people are clicking through to on Google. It gives me that information.
Gosh. Okay, so definitely an analytical sort of statistical lean to things. What other things?
Okay, so to take a completely different tack into my personal life.
Okay.
One of the things I've become personally really quite passionate about over the last sort of 3 to 4 months has been health and fitness. And having got myself an iPhone, which is just, I have to say, not that I'm wanting to promote a particular brand, but I love.
Yes.
Along with my iPad, which I was given for my birthday, this has opened up a whole new world, the world of apps to me. And the apps that you can get in health and fitness, I've discovered they're not just nice things that you play with when you're on the train and you're a bit bored, but actually they can really help to change your life.
Okay.
So I've discovered an app, MyFitnessPal, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This is an app that you can put in the food that you eat. You simply write in, I've eaten a piece of wholemeal toast today. And it tells you how many calories are in that piece of toast.
Right.
And it asks you a little bit about your lifestyle, and it gives you a suggested amount of calories that you should intake per day.
Wow. So it's called MyFitnessPal.
So it's called MyFitnessPal.
Okay.
And it's helped me to lose weight, which is fantastic. So every day, it has become a little obsessive.
That is the danger with these things.
That is the danger, and it appeals to that side of my character. So every day I religiously write into this app what I've eaten, and it adds up the calories for me. Now, I've never liked calorie counting. It's just one of those things that's boring. I don't want to spend my time doing that. But this app does it for me.
Wow.
So it shows me, okay, I'm getting a bit close to the edge here. I'm getting a bit close to my maximum calorie intake for the day. I better go for a walk.
Or skip the pork pie.
Or the bit of cake and chocolate.
Yes.
Or I need to go for a run. And that's the other thing that's become a real passion of mine. Has been running. And runners out there will know that there's a whole myriad of running apps, and that in fact there's a whole kind of world of running which I'm tapping into, which I didn't really know existed before.
That's incredible.
But you can connect up with other people, you can connect up with other runners, and it starts to inspire you to go out, because you know running is one of those things that can get a bit boring, face it.
Yep.
But if you go out with other people, or if you can set yourself targets and things, then it starts to become quite exciting.
And beat a previous time.
You can beat your personal best. Or you can try and beat your personal best. You can run a little bit further. And so the thing that got me into running was this app called 10K Runner.
Okay.
I set myself a target. I wanted to run, be able to run, from only just being able to run to the end of the road without dying. I wanted to be able to run 5K. So I found this app called 10K Runner. And it starts off by you run for a minute, you walk for a minute, you run for a minute, you walk for a minute, and takes you right up to being able to run 5K. And I did it. I couldn't believe I could actually run for 5K. And I did my first proper official 5K run back in at Christmas time, and got myself an official time, which I can, in fact, I beat it yesterday. So
wow. Congratulations.
Really quite exciting.
That's amazing. So 10K Runner, any other ones?
Yeah, so there's an app. There's several apps where that are kind of GPS trackers. So they track where you've run.
Okay.
So you can run your same route. There's one called
Runkeeper.
Runkeeper, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. I Map My Run as well. There's another one.
Yeah, Map My Run. That's the other one I've used. But Runkeeper is fabulous, because obviously that's one way you can connect up with friends and you can comment. It's a bit like Facebook, I suppose. It taps into that whole social network.
And then you
thing.
Broadcast
you
to the world.
You can broadcast it on your Facebook
And then you
page.
Can use Google Analytics to find out who's interested in your running.
I know. Isn't it fabulous? So
yes.
I posted on Facebook my personal best yesterday, and then got, you know, a number of likes and a couple of comments on it. And it starts to appeal to the competitive nature of the sport, really.
Fantastic.
So GPS tracking.
GPS tracking.
And not only running, actually. It does it for cycling and a myriad of other sports.
And walking. Just, if you're like me, you're quite happy with
the exercise thing. Yeah. I suppose if you're a competitive person, which I am, it just appeals to that side of you. So even though it's a thing that you're doing on your own, you can actually start to link up and beat your own times, but also link up with friends. So it becomes a bit more of a social thing to do. And you can comment on each other's statuses. So,
Elspeth Paisley, thank you very much. Elspeth Paisley there. Every so often you come across a piece of software which connects so well with your life you practically forget that it's there. And one of these, for me, is the note-taking software Evernote. It basically enables you to take notes and store them in the cloud. You can make a note on your Android phone and it will upload and stay there until you retrieve it on your Windows laptop or MacBook. And now I've been using Evernote on Windows, Mac, iPhone and Android for years, and its simple user interface works well across all technologies and makes quick note-taking very easy, and it's completely free. So if you don't already know about it, check out Evernote. If you like giving presentations, but want to try something a bit different from PowerPoint, why not try Prezi? Prezi is a presentation platform which enables you to load your data and present it in a very creative and imaginative way. It uses a single presentation slide, but the computer zooms in on parts of the screen to highlight whatever words you write, videos you want to play, or points you want to make. And there are many themes and backgrounds to choose from. It's very interesting. It's quite different from PowerPoint. So if that sounds interesting to you, check them out on www.prezi.com. That's P-R-E-Z-I. And sign up for free and see what it's like. Into interview number two, Mr. Anthony Evans, otherwise known as Skinny Boy. Could you clarify why that is?
Oh, gosh, that's an interesting story. That goes back some time ago when I used to DJ quite a lot for friends, mostly house parties and 40ths and things like that. And I needed a name, and a friend of ours joked that I was a bit like Fatboy Slim, but I wasn't actually very fat. So we changed the name slightly, and the nickname Skinny Boy Evans was appropriate, and it's stayed ever since.
It's stuck with you. So that's your handle, if you like.
Yes.
DJ
yes,
handle.
Indeed, yes.
Okay, so tell us a bit about your life so far.
Okay, well, I've been a primary teacher since 1997. Mm-hmm. And I've always had a vague interest in technology.
Yep.
But that culminated in around, I don't know, it was probably about 99, when I took on the role of ICT coordinator at school and was responsible for introducing new technologies into the primary school. And that grew and grew to the point where I then was chosen to work for the local authority as an ICT advisor, visiting schools and advising them how to use technology as a tool to engage pupils. At the time, I was also writing a blog about things that I was doing, things I was interested in.
And that's ICT.
No, actually, that was a different one. That was Redbridge Primary IT Consultant, which is a boring name, but
yeah, right.
That got picked up by a software company that I did a lot of work for, and coincidentally, I was made redundant from Redbridge, but the software company stepped in and said, "Hey, come work for us." And yeah, I was there for about 2.5 years, and I created a educational website called PurpleMash.com.
Right.
Which was a mix of video stimulus and then drag and drop activities, which was exciting, and that was award winning.
Is that still there?
That is still there. That's
Purple
still
Mash, right.
Yeah. And after a while, I got a bit tired of working in a corporate environment. I had all these ideas about things I wanted to do with kids and IT, and I call it into it, and bravely, last March, went back into the classroom.
Right.
Where I've come back to the role I used to have, which was year six teacher and ICT consultant, evangelist, or whatever you want to call it. And interestingly, the school I'm working at now has around 70 iPads. So for 2 days a week, I'm in different year groups and different classes, delivering lessons with children using iPad technology.
Okay, there goes the iPad just there.
Exactly, a little
whistle ride. Okay, yeah. So what sort of ways can you use iPads in schools?
I mean, in one way, it's not the best fit because they, you know, there are lots of hang-ups, lots of things that they don't have. But equally, because you have everything bundled into that one device, there is a lot of exciting things you can do. For example, when we took our children away on a residential trip, mm-hmm. we took some iPads with us, and we were on Cromer, or one of the beaches near there. And just many of these children hadn't seen the sea, and I wanted some way of making a memento of the day. So I gave the iPads to a number of children. They used iMovie,
mm-hmm.
and they created a trailer, a short little film with a template that you get thrown in with iMovie. And they were able to shoot and edit and produce the film and almost upload it all in the space of this very, you know, foggy, sandy beach in an afternoon. Whereas 2-3 years prior to that, that would have been a whole lot more difficult. You know, to shoot it, edit it, post-produce it, all that kind of stuff. So that kind of, that's one, certainly one application, and there are many more like that where everything's bundled into the device. You know, we do things like we might watch a piece of video in class, and then task the children with GarageBand to create some music to go with that.
Right.
And again, because the iPad is so powerful and it's so much about creativity, we can do that, and we can do that very easily. We don't have to troop off to another room and, you know, be completely decontextualised. It's the technology is there in front of the child at that point.
That's amazing. So it helps to focus the learning, would you say?
Definitely. And a few years ago, there was this buzzword about mobile learning, and I never really understood that or got that, whereas this device really does sum that up for me.
Make it come alive, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what sort of technology would you like to talk about?
I think the thing that's exciting me at the moment, there's two things really. Mm-hmm. One, it never ceases to amaze me what is brought out, what is new and what is exciting. I read a magazine called Wired, which is, you know, constantly throwing out new bits of technology.
Mm.
Sometimes that can, you know, you can get a bit spoilt by that and just, you know, see new things like robot hands that actually feel and things like that. But then all of a sudden there's one killer piece of technology, and for me this week it's been something called Google Glass, which I don't know if you've seen that.
I've heard of it, yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, essentially, from what I can see, and you know, this probably will be with us in the next 2 years, and for my children, how exciting to be growing up in that time, a pair of glasses which acts like a sort of mashup of a video camera and a Google search device at the same time. So you could be on a roller coaster or in a car, and you could be videoing that experience
from your point of view.
From your point of view, mm-hmm. which, you know, gives you a whole new dimension of video. But then also, if you're out and about and you see something you're interested in, it, you don't have to reach inside your pocket to get that device and Google it. It's there, right in your eyes. So you just say, "Tell me about the Niagara Falls" or whatever, and you will get images sent to you, and you know, just right in front of you. And that to me, I can't explain how fascinating and how exciting that is. I think that's going to be amazing.
Wow.
So that wearable technology, that's exciting me. The other thing, I guess, is in schools at the moment, though none of us are really fans of Michael Gove, what one of the good things that he has done is sort of latched on to the head of Google's criticisms about schools,
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, very much the technology curriculum is dumbed down, and it's not stretching, and children are not actually creating their own stuff. They might be making a movie or some music, but are they actually programming?
Absolutely.
So he's shifted the curriculums to a point where in 2014 primary kids will be taught computer science, not just what we currently call IT or ICT. So that for me is quite exciting, because I've done a lot of work this year working with year six pupils in particular. We run a club on Friday afternoon called Code Club, which is actually based on, I think it's a charity organisation, and they send out to teachers and volunteer programmers resources, little PDFs that have probably the equivalent to what we used to do when we were kids, which was, you know, the back of a ZX Spectrum magazine. We'd have like a a program that you then type in, and that would, you know, run a game or whatever. Now, if you sort of fast forward 20 or so years, what you've got now are free bits of software, things called Scratch or Kodu, which allow the children to make their own games, but they all have to be programmed.
Wow.
So what I've been doing Friday afternoon is giving children challenges where they have to make maybe a two-player game or a fruit machine or an animation, but all from hard code. And it's really surprised me how particularly the girls have got into this and have, you know, just run with the challenge of unpacking what's been given to them, testing it, debugging it, and making it work. So I want to see more of that, really, and I'm quite excited about that, because I think too often what they're receiving in school is, or make a PowerPoint or do some research on the internet.
Yeah.
But speaking from my experience, there's nothing more exciting than coding something almost from scratch and then seeing this, you know, whatever the end product is, and feeling the satisfaction of knowing that you've made that yourself.
Mm, yeah. From scratch.
Exactly.
They've also got the Raspberry Pi, haven't they? There's a new thing,
yes.
Which is like a very, very simple computer, which basically enables you to program from scratch.
Yeah.
Runs virtually nothing of an operating system and is very cheap as well.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So it's about really getting the next generation up and coding and developing the next sort of generation of applications and the next generation devices. Fantastic.
Which is particularly pertinent now, because if we, you know, if many children, particularly, many schools are getting into iPads, that's fantastic. Mm. It's lovely to see. But actually the message that an iPad sends to you is that, you know, IT is simple. You know, everything's about an app that does it all for you. If you want to make a Christmas card, you know, take a picture, position the text there, done. Bosh, right? Whereas, I think, you know, those of us who come from a PC background, there's a lot of skill involved in using other applications. So, I, much as I love my iPad, it's a kind of double-edged sword for me, I think, really.
Excellent. Mm. Anthony Evans, thank you very much. Your current WordPress blog is antsict.wordpress.com.
Well, that's me, yes.
Okay, antsict.wordpress.com. There's some fantastic articles and thoughts that Anthony puts on there. So do please check it out. Anthony Evans, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
A couple of brief notes from listeners here. Friends of mine, I have to say, Andy Barons in Berkshire. He doesn't want an iPhone because he just loves his iPod. All he wants is one thing to hold everything that he wants to listen to and play it back. He doesn't want any more bells and whistles and other things to drain the battery. Tom Ronan, whilst having a chat about Stevenson's Rocket, then says, "Stop the press. I am a tech Luddite no more, having just been given a Nike Plus stopwatch GPS for my birthday. How wonderful can the latest technology be? When I've been for a run, I can log on to the Nike website and find all the details of where I've run, how far, speed, calories burnt, and so on. I can add details of what the weather was like and how I felt and all sorts." Fantastic. Ian Simmons, my brother, raves about GIFGAF, the independent mobile phone provider. And he says, basically, the rates are superb and it's a cheaper alternative to contract that's a lot more than just pay-as-you-go. So, GIFGAF, check them out too. John Smith takes an interesting approach to the technology things he likes. He likes simple inventions that change the world. So, for an example, the locking retractor seatbelt, pendulum or webbing, he says, dramatically increased the use and installation of seatbelts as you had more movement in the belt. Decreased road deaths hugely despite it being a time of increased car usage. Nick Burr's favourite technology is his Google Nexus 7 3G, which is the most interesting for him, and his washing machine, probably the most essential, but he doesn't say what brand that is. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Stuff We Like. Remember, if you want to contact me, you can either get through to me on Twitter at David Simmons, or alternatively, try emailing dhsimmons@outlook.com and mark your email Stuff We Like. Thank you.